All right, it's about time for us going to get started this morning. As we all know, Bob came in long enough to change out his suitcase, and he's back on the road again. So he'll be gone this week, so you'll have me again for today as well as Wednesday evening. Bob will be back on next Sunday. So kind of working out pretty good so far. I kind of enjoy it because it gives a chance for Bob to come in. He kind of comes in, gives you one or two lessons, gives you some new information. It gives me the opportunity to come in behind him and go back and review. That's one of the real, I think, the real benefits we have this coming quarter. I've sat through the Bible study with Bob three times, and each time it was done in someone's house, and the lessons usually went about 1 hour each, and they went for about six, maybe seven lessons. So those also work out very well, but the thing is we don't get as much of an opportunity to sit down and really drill in and review. A lot of that review is left upon the individual to kind of take upon themselves. With this class, we've given ourselves the entire quarter to go through. As you see, we went through the first cycle relatively quickly. It took us about two lessons. We went through the second cycle. It took us a little bit longer, but again, we were able to make it through in about four lessons, five lessons. Now, this is pretty much leaving us the entire rest of the quarter to do nothing but expose ourselves to the third cycle and really drill in and look at all the events of the third cycle. As I pointed out last time I taught, again, this isn't an exhaustive study of the scriptures and that we're going to learn every single thing. But it's only, again, we're going to expose ourselves to the stories and how they fit into the 17 periods. The 17 periods are going to give us a good understanding of the overview of the scriptures, the Bible, so that we'll have a good knowledge and understanding. So if we do have the opportunity to come up before, if we can't sit down and study with somebody, we have hopefully enough confidence in the scriptures to know where to turn, where to look, if we need to find something in particular about a particular topic. Someone maybe comes up and raises a question to you saying, well, where do I find a question about eating meat and blood and meat? Well, can somebody answer that question for me? Genesis chapter 9, exactly. The events immediately following the flood. So again, as we continue to go through and we study the scriptures, we're going to review this more and more. And so today, we're going to go through, we're going to essentially review what Bob presented on Wednesday evening. We may get a little bit further ahead, but we're not going to go too far ahead because, like I said, we're going to take our time, review, just like we do with the periods, just like we do with the judges. Now everyone has a pretty good understanding of the 17 periods. And again, I'm pretty certain everyone still remembers because they've been studying, of course. Yes. Okay, a few more nods. Okay. Everybody's continuing to study those judges because if you don't continue to study the judges, if you don't continue to study the scriptures, what happens? We learn it. Just like we did in school, we learned it, we studied for a test, we took the test, but what happens after we got done with the test? Do we just take that book and we set it on the shelf? Okay, how many people remember everything they learned in geometry and algebra? Okay, but again, with the scriptures, we can't allow that to happen. We need to make sure we have a working knowledge of the scriptures. So again, as that time and opportunity arises, if something presents itself before us, we're ready for it when the harvest is ready. We don't want to find ourselves lacking. We want to be ready for when any time opportunity comes before. So again, we talked about the Exodus on Wednesday evening. Again, being the third cycle, a lot of this stuff is not new. It's just, I hate to use the word regurgitate, but we're taking this information, presenting it over and over again. So again, you get more and more comfortable each time. So every time we present something, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that, and this is where it fits, and we're fine-tuning it as we go along. So what events mark the beginning and the end of this period? How do we start the period of the Exodus? What do we find? What do we find? We find Israel. They're in bondage where? In Egypt, okay? And so let's take one step back. What's the connected story? How did Israel end up in Egypt? I mean, there were people, they were in Canaan's land. Well, how did they get in Egypt? Linking story of Joseph, exactly. So we start out with Israel, they're in Egypt, they're oppressed. And so what marks the end of this period? Okay, they refuse to go to land. Exodus, meaning the mass exodus, they're leaving out of Egypt. God leads them out of Egypt. He protects them. He parts the Red Sea. He goes through, gives them deliverance, brings them through trials. They come to the point up to the end of the period where they send out the 12 spies. They spy out the land, and they come back with 10 of them come back with a not so favorable report. Two of them say, we can definitely take the land. And the people say, no, we're refusing to go in the land. We can't do it. And at that point, we see where the Exodus just comes to a stop. And that leads us into the next period, which is the wandering the wilderness. Okay, very good. So which books of the Bible contain the period of the Exodus? Exodus, okay, that's a given. Okay, what else? Leviticus, and then? Numbers 1 through 13, okay? And I think Bob kind of used the analogy when he was teaching the class at our house is it's pretty easy to remember number 13 because most people don't associate number 13 being a lucky number, do they? And we can see where the Israel's luck changed in chapter 13. Instead of them being faithful and obedient to God and knowing that God could deliver them, God could give them the victory, instead they had doubt in their mind, and because of that, their luck turned for the worse, and now they're condemned to wander in the wilderness. So, prior to Bob teaching class on Wednesday evening, I had taken the class prior to that to take the time and opportunity to really drill in and review the outline of Genesis. Again, we spent quite a bit of time. I think we had a real good experience as far as people learning how to break it up into individual parts, where we could find something. If we want to find one of the patriarchs, where do we turn? If we want to find something, events immediately following the flood, where do we turn? And so, can we also learn the outline of Exodus? Okay. After going through Genesis, we can see nothing's impossible. Is it going to get a little more detailed as we move along? Yes, it is. But unfortunately for us, we have the book, which Bob and Sandra put together for us, and utilizing this book. If you look on beginning on page 26 and then following over to page 27, they give us a pretty good outline here, how to break up the book of Exodus and where we need to find something. So we say, hey, we want to find something about the people of Israel leaving Egypt, where are we going to turn? It's going to be somewhere between Exodus 1 and chapter 15. Okay? So as we go through, we're going to take the time today. A lot of story stuff or stuff that we've already talked about and discussed on Wednesday evening. But again, we want to take the time to review, go over where we find these things in the scriptures. And really, as we kind of pointed out before, in cycle 3, we really, really want to, you can have the blue book there beside you, but we want the Bible open in front of you, and we want you flipping through the pages. The best way to become familiar with your Bible is just to sit there and flip through the pages. We're going to go one by one, flip through it, see where we find particular stories or events. This is also a good opportunity if you like to fold over the corner of your page, if you like to highlight, if you like to mark it in the column, whatever you like to do, in order for you to kind of remember and have little triggers in your mind or your visual cues in your script, your Bible, to where you can find these periods, where you can find particular events. Don't be afraid to mark up the Bible. That's what it's there for. It's your tool, and you want to make sure you have it ready and available to you. So again, Exodus chapters 1 through 15, we read of the escape from Egypt. This brings us from the beginning of Israel's in bondage up to the point of them leaving out of Egypt. We move on from chapters 16 through 18, which is really essentially the journey to Mount Sinai. Exodus 19 through 24, God makes a covenant with his people. And we talked about this under cycle 2. God told them, I'm going to make you my people. Now, who here wouldn't like to have that covenant made with them? Well, of course, we still have that today available to us. But at that point, they had God saying, if you'll only believe him, if you'll be faithful according to my commands, if you'll obey my commands and remain faithful, I'll provide for you. And we saw that time and time again as they went and battled against their enemies. And as long as they were faithful, God gave them deliverance. God gave them the victory. As soon as they started to wane their faith towards God and towards other things, we saw where God's favor wasn't given to them, and they lost victories and certain things that happened to them. So again, we have God makes his covenant here in 19 through 24. The tabernacle and the instructions for constructing the tabernacle we have in Exodus 25 through 30. Exodus 31, where we see two particular individuals are picked out to be the craftsmen to direct the work for the construction of the tabernacle. Okay? So God's given them the knowledge, he's given them the wisdom, the understanding they needed in order to construct exactly what he had set out for them to do. Just like God had given Noah specific instructions to build the ark, he also here at this point, he gives these individuals specific instructions on this is how I want it done. What type of wood, what type of measurements, how is it supposed to be constructed, how is it supposed to be presented. He didn't leave anything for chance. He gave them specific instructions on this is how I want it done in order for it to be pleasing in my sight. Exodus chapter 32 through 34, we read of Israel breaks their covenant. How did they break their covenant? Golden calf. Okay, very good. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on, but again, we see where God provides them, delivers them. He proves his power and authority to them. They say, oh, we're going to follow you, no questions asked. And what happens with Israel? They believe, they're faithful, they start out here on the peak, then they start to falter away, they chase after idols, they chase after their own lusts, and their relationship with God kind of takes a dip like on a roller coaster, and then they finally bottom out. And this is just one of those examples where, I mean, God's proven to them and shown to them signs, miracles, his authority, but yet they still take opportunities from time to time to turn away from God, and they build themselves a golden calf only because Moses' return was delayed from Mount Sinai. And so they're worried. So they said, well, let's build ourselves a golden calf. Exodus 35 through 40, we see where the tabernacle is actually built and set up. And then we go in the book of Leviticus, teaches us the laws are given for the priests and Levites, and teaches us the concept of holiness. And then finally, Numbers 1 through 9, the census is taken, the gift of the princes, Passover is observed. At this point, during this time, Numbers 1 through 9, we see this is actually 1 year from the time they left Egypt. And then finally, Numbers 10 through 12, Mount Sinai, the journey from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. Okay? So that pretty much is going to bring us up to the point of 13, where the spies are sent out to bring back a report. And that marks the end again of the Exodus before we start into the wandering the wilderness. So again, today I'd like to go through. Everybody have your Bible open. Let's go ahead and start off in Exodus chapter 1. What do we read about in Exodus chapter 1? The bondage of the people. Okay. So we read, the book opens with Israel. It's in Egypt. They're in bondage. They're being oppressed. They cry out to God. The new Pharaoh arises that knows not Joseph. Now, I mean, again, you would think as much that Joseph had done for the nation of Egypt, as much as he had done to help deliver them from central destruction, if they had not had the instructions of Joseph through God, from God through Joseph, how to protect themselves, how to preserve themselves, do you think the nation of Egypt would have made through that famine? I don't think so. But again, because of Joseph's instructions, Pharaoh essentially put Joseph second in charge over everything. And because of that, we see where not only Egypt, but also the nation of Israel was carried through this famine. But time goes by, and what happens? They get a little forgetful. And now we got all this people, all the Hebrews, all this nation of Israel, they're getting growing, they're growing, and growing. And then the Pharaoh arises. He doesn't quite remember everything that Joseph had done and some of the promises that were made prior to him. And he begins to worry. He worries that the Israelites are going to be going to overtake the land. Now, I think we talked about this in cycle 2. Did Israel have any intention of taking over the land of Egypt? No. Okay, they had no intention of doing that. But again, Pharaoh, seeing this great mass of people just continue to grow, get bigger, and develop, he worries that someone's going to steal away his kingdom. So he begins to worry about that. And then so he does three things to try and deter the Israelites from continuing to grow and get bigger and amass more numbers. What were those three tactics he did? First one was to, okay, the taskmasters over, made them slaves. He put them under hard labor. It wasn't so much that, hey, I want you to go do this and I want you to go do this desk job and we're not going to pay you. It's you're going to go out there and do hard physical labor. And so he did that in order to help deter them. And what happened? Did it backfire? Absolutely. They didn't continue to have less children. They didn't continue to grow. And they were actually continuing, God blessed them, and they continued to grow and grew more numerous. Then the Pharaoh came and he told the Egyptian midwives to do what? To kill all the baby boys that were born. Okay? Did the midwives follow through with that plan? Absolutely not. And because of that, God had blessed those midwives. And what was the excuse that the midwives came back to Pharaoh and told Pharaoh? What did he tell them? All right, well, that's a pretty good compliment to the Hebrew women. So they turned around and said, they're strong women. Before we even got there, they already had their babies. They're done and on their way. We showed up too late. And so because of that, that plan backfired on as well. And then finally, he said, never mind just the midwives. All Egyptians are commanded to kill any baby Hebrew boy that they find. And so at this point brings us up to the point of the story where we see the birth of who? Moses, okay? So we have the birth of Moses beginning in Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2 is going to cover the birth of Moses up to the first 40 years of his life. Now, Exodus chapter 2, when you look at it, let's take a look. I mean, it's not a overly long chapter. But when you stop to consider all the stories of Moses and everything that happens in his earlier childhood and growing up and being raised up, it seems like this would take up maybe a couple chapters, but really it doesn't. It's all found in Exodus chapter 2. So we start out with the birth of Moses, him being hidden for 3 months by his mother. The story of how he was put in the bulrushes, sent in an ark across the river, found by who? Pharaoh's daughter. Pharaoh's daughter takes him in and raises him up. Not only was he raised by Pharaoh's daughter, but he was in first earlier years, he was nurtured by who? He's also nurtured by his mother, who gave him the opportunity to turn around and instill in him the values and the knowledge of the Hebrew nation. All this is still within chapter 2. We move on that. We see where Moses grows up. He's an adult. He sees the Egyptian out there beating on the Hebrew, and what does he do? Kills that Hebrew, because he wants to help protect, deliver his people. Even though he's been raised up as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, in his heart, he knows that he's still what? He's not an Egyptian. He's still a Hebrew. He's still an Israelite. Kills that Egyptian. Next day, very next day, he goes out and he finds two of his brethren fighting amongst each other. And he wasn't doing anything of ill will. He's trying to go out and help protect them. He's saying, don't fight amongst yourself. Don't do that. And what do they turn around and do? They didn't want his help, did they? In fact, they didn't so much that they didn't want the help. They turn around. What did they tell him? Okay, who are you to do this? And are you going to turn around and kill us like you did that Egyptian? Well, when Moses killed that Egyptian, did he think that anyone else saw him do that? No, he thought he had done it in private. He thought he had done it the way, done away with that Egyptian and taken care of it. But of course, other people saw that, and that news spread. And so when Moses heard that others knew about the Egyptian, what did he do? He became frightened. And he worried for his own life. To the point that he what? He left. He fled. Left into the wilderness, okay? Again, where is this all found? Exodus chapter 2. It's a lot of stories there, all within Exodus chapter 2. Moses, again, we read where he was rejected as the deliverer for the Hebrew and flees. And the chapter ends with Israel still in bondage. They're still being oppressed by the Egyptians, and they're crying out to God. We go to Exodus chapters 3 and 4. What do we read about in Exodus chapter 3 and 4? When we left off with chapter 2, their deliverer, Moses, he's taken off. He's fleeing to the wilderness. And we still have the nation of Israel. They're still in the same position they were at the beginning of chapter 1. So what's changed? Okay? God hears their cries. We had the story of the burning bush. Okay? Was it just any ordinary burning bush? It was a pretty special burning bush. And we had the burning bush. And who finds this burning bush? Moses does. Okay. What is this burning bush? What is it? What was the instructions? Okay. God's coming to him giving instructions. He says, I've heard the cries of my people, and I'm going to send you to be my deliverer, help deliver those people out of Egypt. And when we talked about on Wednesday night, Bob pointed out there was four questions that when Moses was first given these instructions, he had four questions. Now, did Moses immediately jump at the opportunity to be the deliverer? I mean, he's already taken the opportunity. He already took the initiative once to go through and say, hey, let me help my people. And what did they do? They rejected him. He fled. Okay, now we have the burning bush. Now God says, no, now's the opportunity. Now's the chance for you to go back and be that deliverer. And so we see that Moses wasn't really initially, he wasn't all about, hey, let me seize this opportunity and run out there to do that. So he asked God, well, who am I to do this? Okay? Moses, again, he was unsure that he was able to be the one to carry out God's plan. He wasn't sure himself that he was the one, he was the best candidate for the job. And then he goes on, and I think Bob pointed out on Wednesday, he kind of abbreviated this question, but it's, who are you? Okay? So now he first starts out with, well, I'm not sure I'm the one to do it. And then he goes on to say, well, who am I going to say sent me to do this? Who am I going to state that said, by what authority am I here to do this? And again, he's worried about, he's starting to make some excuses. So he goes on and says, well, who are you? Who or what God will Moses state that he was sent by to be that deliverer? And then third one was, well, how can I proclaim the message? I'm not exactly what you call an eloquent man. Okay? He, again, still wanting to find reasons why he can't be the one to do it. He's wanting to find excuses why maybe God should select somebody else better to do the job than Moses could. But was Moses the right man for the job? Okay. God wasn't really selecting him because he was an eloquent man. He was good with speech. God was selecting Moses because of his faith. And then finally, Moses asked, well, why will they believe me? If I show up, I already fleed once. They already knew I killed that Egyptian. I fleed into the wilderness. I've been gone for 40 years. They probably don't remember who I am. How are they going to believe me? Why will they believe me? What did God give to Moses? You got your Bible there. It's an open. Okay, give him power, the ability to produce signs. So again, as we go through cycle three, keep your Bible open. I'm going to throw some questions out there, and I'm hoping to hear the answers back to me. So again, he gave him the power to do signs to show the authority that was with him by God. And then we come to Exodus chapter 5. Everybody turn over to Exodus chapter 5. And what do we learn about in Exodus chapter 5? Okay. Their labor has been increased. And how do they increase it? I mean, they're already doing hard labor. How do they increase it? What do they do? Okay, now they got to not only make their own brick, but now they got to go out, gather the straw, then come back and still do that same job that was already occupying their full day, but now they got to go out and do something else additional. So again, they're crying out to God. And Moses goes before Pharaoh, and the famous statement, what does he say? Let my people go. Okay? And what was Pharaoh's attitude towards this? Okay? Who is this God that I should let? Who am I to obey him? Okay? So Pharaoh places Israel under harder labor, takes away their straw. Now, Israel resents Moses and Aaron. So again, like Bob pointed out on Wednesday, when they showed up, they said, oh, here. There's someone here to help us out. And so they go before Pharaoh, and the result of them going before Pharaoh, they get increased labor, and so now they're like, oh, we're better off before he even showed up. Exodus chapter 6, we roll into Exodus chapter 6 from 5, and we see that Moses is a little deterred. He already started out, he didn't really think that he was the best man for the job. He was worried that he was going to have the authority, the power, the presence to go before Pharaoh and help release the people. And sure enough, in chapter 5, he goes, and Pharaoh challenges him. He gets deterred, Exodus chapter 6, and what does God remind Moses? God told him in the front end, Pharaoh's not going to want to listen to you. He's going to be hard-hearted. And God also assured Moses that he would take action against Pharaoh. Now, what kind of action did God take against Pharaoh? The plagues, okay? So we read about the plagues in Exodus chapter 7 through 11, so let's go ahead and flip through Exodus chapter 7 through 11. We start out with the plague of the blood. Okay, so we got Exodus, the plague of the blood. We progress along. We got the water turning to blood to the frogs over the land. Again, Pharaoh seeing these great wonders. His own magicians and stuff can't reproduce what's happening, but they continue to harden his heart. And then we had the lice, plague of the flies, the death of all the livestock, the boils. Again, time after time after time, these miracles and wonders are being presented before Pharaoh. And these weren't great miracles where we saw great things happening that made you feel great inside about yourself and all warm and fuzzy. These are things that were oppressing the people of Egypt. These were things that were affecting Pharaoh directly. But again, he wasn't allowing his heart. He was still very, very stubborn. He was stubborn to the point he said, well, who am I to obey God? And so, continuing on, we got the plague of the hail, the locusts, darkness over the land. Now, I mean, some of them you think, okay, well, maybe they just gathered up a lot of flies, they gathered up a lot of locusts. But I mean, you got darkness. Who can control the sun? Okay? I mean, you can put as big of a canopy as you want, but it's still not going to cause darkness over the entire land. So, Pharaoh's still not clicking his mind. Who is this God that I am to obey him? And so we finally had the last plague, which was what? The death of the firstborn. Okay? Did Pharaoh take notice on this one? Okay. Now it finally started to click on him what was happening here. So now we move into Exodus chapter 12 through 13. Excuse me. And we read of the Passover. Okay? The story of the Passover. And we know from this last plague, who is going to be affected by this plague? Everybody. Okay. Okay. Unless they put the blood over the lintel, the destruction that God helped to provide to his people, his covenant people, this is how you're going to protect yourself. This plague is going to affect everybody in the land. unless you were to do the instructions of God and put the blood over the lintel and over the doorpost. But again, we see where the plague was to affect everybody. Exactly. He's supposed to put the lamb's blood over the lintel. And so the plague was going to affect everybody, but Israel, again, being covenant people of God, he gives them the instructions on how to protect themselves from this last plague. Now, again, remember, the firstborn not only of the boys, but also of your livestock. So, I mean, this was going to put a damper on not only just losing your child, but also your livestock, which is also a good source of your income. Your wealth was based on these people's livestock at this time. And then we also read in chapters 12, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. So let's go and turn to chapter 12, verses 14 through 22. We read of how God gives instructions for the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And then we also have Pharaoh. He commands the people to leave. So finally, we have the unleavened bread, which again is very important, because why? What's the significance of the unleavened bread? Okay. When we had the Lord's Supper, is that leavened or unleavened bread? Okay. What was the significance when Pharaoh finally told the people to leave? They had to leave. It wasn't any time for them to wait for their bread to rise. They're already commanded to not have any leaven in their household. And so they leave. Pharaoh commands them to leave. And again, at this point, Moses and Aaron kept going before Moses or for Pharaoh and saying, hey, let our people go. And they present a plague. Let our people go. Present another plague. Another plague. Another plague. All this time, it was days between the periods of these plagues. And again, Pharaoh still not affected by it. Finally, when that last plague takes effect, Pharaoh didn't say, hey, you know what? This really isn't working out. I know you've got been in the land. You've helped us in the past. We've even utilized you as free labor. We appreciate your efforts. Tell you what, go ahead and take yourself 30 days. 30 days, by the end of the month, let's go ahead and get you guys out of this land and move on to the next place. Carry on your journey. But I need you out of here. Give yourself 30 days to do so. Did they have that benefit? No. When they were told to leave, it wasn't with a, hey, please leave. It's, hey, get out of my land. I need you out of here. They were not willing, Pharaoh was not willing to take on the responsibility of having the Israelites in his land anymore because they were commanded to leave by God. We also read of the consecration of the firstborn to God. Now, what was the significance of the consecration of the firstborn? Why did God require the firstborn? This again ties back to the Passover. They were delivered. If they had not done what God had commanded to them, their firstborn would have been removed from them anyways. But God's saying, hey, here's the consecration of firstborn to me. And then we read of how God guided them as they were leaving out of land. He came to them in two forms. By day in the form of, okay, the pillar of the cloud. And then by night, pillar of the fire. Okay, so again, we see where God is with them. God is going out before them. God is still guiding them and directing them. Moses led the people out of the land of Egypt, but it was by the authority of God. Is by the God's authority, and God was with them. He showed his presence to them. Exodus chapter 14, Pharaoh then realizes, hey, I sent all those Hebrews go. Who's going to do all the work? And he was upset about this, and he chased and pursued them. He didn't just send out a few people saying, no, let's negotiate this. Come on back. He sent out all of his armies, all his chariots to pursue them. And the Israelites, we see in verse 10 through 12, Exodus chapter 10, Exodus chapter 14, 10 through 12. As Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that was spoken, or that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to have served the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And again, just time and time again, we see just how fickle the people of Israel really are. Okay, they cried out to God, we can't take this anymore. We need to deliver. We need something to happen. We need to get out of here. God sends them that deliverer. Moses leads them out of the land. As soon as they start to see any type of opposition, why are you doing this to us? They get upset. They cry out against God. They cry out to Moses, why are you doing this to us? We'd have been so much better off in Egypt. Although when they were in Egypt, they did what? Nothing but cry out to God about, hey, we need to get out of here. We can't take this anymore. And so they become frightened. And God parts the Red Sea. They turn around. They're able to get away from the Egyptians. Not only did they get away from the Egyptians, but what happens when the Egyptians pursued them through the Red Sea? The waters came back down, and again, we see where they're faithful to God. God delivers them, gives them the victory over their enemies, and destroys their enemies. Exodus chapter 15 is the song of Moses and Israel, a song of triumph and deliverance. And then they go on to travel from Egypt, and they continue their journey on to Mara. And Bob talked about Mara on Wednesday evening. Mara standing for the word bitter, okay? So what's the story behind this? The place of bitter water. And again, we see not only, this is just a matter of a few days later, Israel once again continues to grumble against God, grumble against Moses. Why have you done this to us? We're so thirsty. And they come to a place of water, and the water is too bitter. And what does God command Moses to do? Take the tree, throw it into the water, so the water is able to be drank at that point. So again, we see where Mara, meaning bitter, a place of bitter water. But again, this is just another example where Israel takes the opportunity to grumble out against God. And then they travel, continue to travel on to Elim, where they come to a place of 12 springs. And Bob, as he described on Wednesday evening, this was a place where there was ample water for not only them, their livestock. Everyone could drink till their heart was happy. And they continue on with their travels. In Exodus chapter 16, they travel to Sin. And here's where the Lord provides what to his people to sustain them. You want to turn with that? Exodus chapter 4 through 6. Okay, the manna. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain the bread from heaven for you and for the people to go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, at evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you are grumbling against us? So again, he provides them with manna to provide them the nourishment they need to sustain themselves while they're on their journey. We also see again, as he pointed out, that on that sixth day when they go out to gather, they're to do what? Gather up twice as much. Now, those prior days, they were commanded to gather up how much? Just what they needed for that one day. They weren't supposed to go out and hoard it all up and gather up more than what they needed. They were commanded to take what they needed for that day, but on the sixth day to go out and gather out twice as much as they needed in order that they could observe the Sabbath. Okay? Exodus chapter 17, they continue on their journey. They travel to Rephidim. Okay, so again, they're still on their exodus. They're leaving out of the land of Egypt. They're journeying on. They travel to Rephidim. What happens to Rephidim? Okay, we got more water. Okay, except for this time, the water didn't come from an existing body of water. Where did it come from? Come from the rock. Okay, so again, if you read prior to this, you read about Israel doing what? Grumbling against God, grumbling against Moses. Why are you doing this to us? Why are you? We're going to die here. They're always so worried about dying in the wilderness when they knew that if they'd stayed in the land of Egypt, they were doing nothing but being oppressed. And surely they're going to be dying there. They're going to die in Egypt anyways, but they're going to die a life of a slave, die a life of someone being oppressed. Here, God's given them their chance for freedom, provided them many miracles, signs, just to prove his authority. But every time they turn the corner, it's always, why have you done this? Why have you taken us out of Egypt? And so he gives them the rock, water from the rock. And Israel battled against the Amalekites, okay? Did Israel go out to the Amalekites to challenge them for a battle? No, what happened? Okay, King Amalek came out and he said he went out to battle against the Canaanites, against the Israelites. So the Amalekites came out to battle against them. Where else are we going to read about the Amalekites? Okay, exactly. So God remembers the actions of the Amalekites at this point. Now, when Israel battles against the Amalekites, they gain the victory. But God remembers the attitude of King Amalek and the attitude of that country against his people. And he says, I'm not going to remember. So it's kind of like an elephant. They never forget. many, many years pass by, and then eventually God sends out Saul to avenge his nation. What's wrong with the weight of Moses' arms during this period? Okay, exactly. Again, and this is a story, definitely, when you're presenting it to the younger children, something that's definitely going to click in their mind, something they're not going to forget, no matter how old they get, as they move through life. If you teach them about the story of how they battled against the Amalekites, and again, as long as Moses held his arms up, they had the victory. They were winning, pursuing over the Amalekites. But as soon as he started to lower his arms, what happened? The Amalekites started to persevere against them. So eventually they got his arms propped up, and they gained the victory. Exodus chapter 18, we read how Jethro and then Moses' wife and children join him. But the important point that was made here in chapter 18 was the fact that we still see that Moses, in addition to being the God to trek them out of Egypt, is serving as the judge over the people. And the people are every day just lining up, and he's sitting there from morning till night doing nothing but judging the people, helping to guide them in their decisions and directions and decisions. And Jethro, his father-in-law, says what? This is a good point for some delegation. Now, I always like to say delegation is the key to success. Was Moses able to turn around and listen to the people's questions, their issues, and give them guidance and wisdom in making those right decisions? Absolutely. No question about it. Was that job best served by Moses, or could somebody else also fill in for that job? Somebody else could also help assist Moses in doing that. And we see that where others are appointed, and they're all divided, and others are appointed to go before the other elders. Any of the smaller stuff that really doesn't need to be bothered by Moses, don't need to bother Moses with, was taken care of by the other elders. But something that was a more weightier matter, that was, again, carried forth before Moses for him to decide. So again, we still have them on their journey, still within the book of Exodus. And we move on to Exodus chapter 19, and we have Israel finally comes to a point where they stop at Mount Sinai. Okay? What are some of the significant events that happened at Mount Sinai? We already had the burning bush a little earlier, but we do have the burning mountaintop, so I'll give you that much. Okay. Exactly. So God again continues to proclaim Israel as his people. Verses 3 through 6. So God again points out that you are my people. All that the Lord has spoken, we will do. We read that in verse 8. All the Lord has spoken, we will do. So they turn around, they give carte blanche to the Lord, said, anything you say, no questions asked, we're going to do it. You're going to be our God. We're going to be your covenant people. This sounds like a pretty good arrangement to us. All that you say, we will do. Has this been the case so far? No. I mean, they've already had time and opportunities to prove themselves to be God's chosen people, to be faithful to God. But they've faltered from time to time. Just like we do today, we are God's chosen people. As a Christian, we turn around, we commit ourselves to God, but sometimes we falter, and again, we need to repent of those sins and turn back to God. But here we see, again, the nation of Israel, just like a roller coaster, up and down, always being faithful, turning away. Faithful, turning away. But they say here, verse 8, all that you say, all that you speak, we will do. Okay? We also see with the Lord at Mount Sinai. So again, we see the presence of the Lord at Mount Sinai. And the presence, we read in verses 16 through 20, was shown in what way? Remember there was great thunder and lightning? And the people, what happened when the people heard the thunder and lightning at Mount Sinai? What did they do? Did they rejoice? Did they say, the Lord's among us? What did they do? What was their reaction? They trembled. They were afraid. Should they have been afraid? Absolutely. I mean, there's the presence, the power of God right there before you. And I know me, if I was one of those individuals at that time, and I could think back to the past, my reactions and my behavior, the past previous couple weeks of being delivered but grumbling. Being delivered, given food, and grumbling. Grumble, grumble, grumble. And now here you have the presence of the Lord before you, and now it's like, ooh. Now it's here, it's time for my actions to be accounted for. And so they were trembled. They were fearful in the presence of God. And we go on again in Exodus chapter 20, we receive the Ten Commandments. Okay, so God, again, you're my people. They say, all you speak we will do. He gives them the Ten Commandments. These are the things that they need to do in order to be faithful to God, in order to be pleasing in His sight, nor for them to remain God's covenant people. And so again, we read again of in verses 18 through 21, the presence of God at Mount Sinai. Now, were anyone in Israel, anyone in the nation of Israel, allowed to just climb up the mountain and go see the presence of the Lord? No, they were told to stay at the foot of the mountain. Only Moses was allowed to go up to see and present it. And then we go on in Exodus chapter 21 through 24, where we have the commands and ordinances, as well as the instructions for the people. So God continues to give them instructions, what they need to do. These are instructions not even so much about the Ten Commandments, but also just daily activities, things that they need to know in order to carry out their daily lives successfully. And then we also read of the feast days that were established. And again, Bob pointed out, we see this in Exodus chapter 23, and they're also duplicated and referenced over in Numbers 23. So remember the word, the number 23, we should be in a good position. But again, Passover, Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, so all three of these are established here in 21 through 24 of Exodus. And then Israel, again, affirms their covenant with God. They said, we're still on board. We're definitely with you. All that you speak, we will do. No questions asked. They were with God. Exodus chapter 25 through 30. Here we start to read, we talk about in the beginning of class, they're receiving the instructions for building the tabernacle. Okay, so they're given the instructions, specific instructions. Exodus 31, where two men are called out, appointed by God to be those individuals to oversee, to direct the work that God had given them to do. Specific instructions on how to accomplish what God asked them to do. And again, He gave them two individuals to be those ones to oversee that work. And then we read in Exodus chapter 32 through 34. What happened again? The golden calf, okay? So again, Moses went back up on the mountain, and he didn't come back down that night. He delayed, his return was delayed for how long? 40 days, 40 nights. He was up there, and people began to grumble, worry. I think it's more grumbling than worry. They said, oh, well, we don't know if he's going to return. What are we going to do? And so what did they decide to do for themselves? Build themselves a golden calf. And so what happened, what will we read about in verses 7 through 10 of chapter 32? Turn with me. Exodus chapter 32, 7 through 10. We see the reaction of God. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, go down at once, for your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed to it, and said, this is our God, O Israel, or this is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. And now then, let me alone, that my anger may burn against them, and that I may destroy them, and I will make of you a great nation. Okay? So, obviously, let's go back to all that you speak, we will do. What was the first commandment? Okay. I'll be God. There'll be no other gods before me. It wasn't like the pharaohs where there was many years passed by, many pharaohs came and went, and they kind of got a little forgetful. We're talking about a matter of a short period of time, and they've already turned away from what they've already said. You speak it, we'll do it. We're your people, no questions asked. Now here we see that Moses was delayed by 40 days, 40 nights, and all of a sudden they've now turned away from God and they've decided to make themselves their own God. And God's anger against them to the point he's ready to do what? Destroy each and every one of them. And he said, I'll make you a new nation. And what did Moses do? He interceded for the people. Now, you got to tip your hat to Moses. Time and time again, as much as they grumble, he still intercedes on their behalf. And he says, well, if you do allow this to happen, then it just shows that they would have been better off in Egypt. But instead, he entreats the Lord to let him, and then he goes down from the mountain and he does what? He rebukes them for their action. So not only does Moses turn around and take the opportunity to entreat the Lord, say, hey, spare their lives, but he also goes down and does what's absolutely necessary and rebukes them for their actions. 33 to 34, the Lord instructs them to continue on their journey, but they didn't leave right at that point. Because we see that the tablets were replaced, God renews his covenant with Israel, and then in verses 35 through 40, the actual building of the tabernacle occurs here, instructions for the ark, the furniture, the priestly garments, and the tabernacle is completed. And then why was the tabernacle not put to immediate use? I'll leave you with that question, and we'll finish up on Wednesday. Thank you.